our souls have an ancient history. We've been together. Maybe we've hated each other in previous incarnations. Maybe we really didn't get along. And we did not coincidentally find each other. There's actually an awesome responsibility that we have to try to make it work.
Welcome to Spiritually Hungry. I'll have enough energy for the both of us. All right. Welcome to Spiritually Hungry. Today, we are going to continue our conversation about having difficult conversations. We're going to give more tips and more tools.
I'll be mindful not to interrupt you too much.
No, you can today because I'm a little tired myself. Honestly, I've had so much caffeine today and it did the opposite effect. You know how that happens sometimes?
Yes, happens.
I don't know why that. It never happens to me. Rarely.
Well, the coffee always happens to me.
Rarely.
I drink matcha green tea.
But now this third cup of caffeine, fourth for the day, actually, I'm starting to feel it.
Nice.
I know. I'm excited about that.
Are you excited about the podcast?
I'm excited to feel some energy. Yeah. All right. I am excited about this. I want to start off a story. I'll try to get all the words out. I want to start out by telling a story of Kara and Saul.
I don't think I know anybody named Kara personally.
You feel like you know everybody that I know?
Nope.
There you go.
I met one Saul a long time ago.
Of my friends?
No.
Oh, that's what we're talking about.
Your friends, Kara and Saul.
So they were a model couple to all of their friends. And we're living a very happy life together, happily married. And then she got pregnant with her third child when her second child was 3 months old. So her oldest was six, and then her second one was one, and then they had the newborn. That's actually mirrors our first three kids, funnily enough. I was thinking about it as I was thinking about sharing the story. Our experience was very different, but I think because we had so many challenges before the third in the second pregnancy, that it had already awakened an appreciation for each other that put us on more stable footing, but not the case for Kara and Saul. So
sorry to hear that.
The newborn also was born a colicky baby. So Fussy was allergic to every single thing. She had to limit everything that she ate because anything would set the baby off. And so they stopped going out. They didn't go to restaurants. She was really restrictive. They also weren't intimate with each other. There's a lot of stress in the house. And it started to create a wedge. And they weren't really talking about their feelings. They weren't sharing what they were thinking. And she started to judge her husband and was thinking that he's not a supportive partner, right? This is the story that she created in her head, that he is oppositional, that he's selfish, that he's distant, that he's unsupportive. And then, of course, Saul had his own narrative in his head around what Kara was and that she was irresponsible basically for getting pregnant so quickly after their second born, even though she was on birth control and it absolutely was not her fault or within her control of when they got pregnant. Sweetie, we'll talk about it later.
Okay.
So that was the state of their relationship for a couple of months. And then they were feeling distant. Saul was unhappy and he was scrolling through Facebook and he happened upon somebody who he knew in high school. And she was recently divorced and they started to have a friendship. And then Saul started to feel heard and seen and was having different conversations with her. And eventually it led to a physical affair as well. First it was emotional and then it became physical. And the guilt and shame that he felt after some period of time was so overwhelming that he eventually confessed to his wife and shared how he had strayed. And it could have broken their marriage for sure. But in this case, it brought them closer together.
Really?
And they realized that they had blamed each other for their circumstance and where they had found each other and that they still loved one another and that it wasn't anybody's fault. This was just life. And they were going through a life quake, basically. So what's interesting is that if we don't share our feelings, if we don't communicate, then we create stories in our heads. The story that Saul, that Kara had created about Saul was that he was distant and unsupportive, when really it was just a very stressful time. And that was his way of handling it, right? Was to disengage. And Kara wasn't irresponsible. Sometimes things happen that are out of our control. So if we don't stop and question and really say, okay, well, what is the story in my head versus what are facts? You know, what else is going on outside of my lens of self? What's going on for my partner? And when I work with couples, this is often what I do. In fact, I spoke with a couple today she started out saying that, you know, they're newly married. So she said, you know, we're one, and whatever he's experiencing, I'm experiencing. His pain is my pain. And then they started to share some of the fights that they have. And I said, well, if you were really one, you would know that he is feeling this, this, and that. And clearly you're not considering his feelings when you're having these kinds of conversations. And it's really about the in-laws. And, you know, there's their families, both of their parents are like the party in their marriage. And it's so dangerous. But my point is, it's funny because we'd like to think, yeah, we're one and we're together. But in these, when stress is added, right, and people haven't had opportunities to navigate that, and if their foundation isn't very strong, then it's enough to derail a couple for sure.
And I would add, and it's related to really something we spoke about how in relationships, if you're not on a spiritual path, it's very, very difficult to maintain a thriving one. And that is because it is the nature of the ego to create stories.
Yes.
And the reality is...
Well, the true story is more painful usually because you have to own up to your own things.
Well, right. But so the reality is that in any given moment, you can find something to be distant about or upset about or disappointed about in your partner. That's just a fact, right?
Really?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I'm kidding. It could be minuscule or it could be significant, but the question isn't whether you can find something. The question is, are you focusing on that? And you're allowing your ego to develop a story based on that. And that is something that, again, we do that all the time outside of our relationships. The reality is every person we're angry with, disappointed with, again, there are times where we're right, but we're never 100% right. And the other person is never 100% wrong. But the ego, its job is to latch on to the parts of the narrative that feed its story, that you're great, that person's terrible, whatever the story may be. And we allow that, unless you're actively spiritual, you allow the ego to direct you in life, and the stories that it creates directs so much of our you know, life story, the people we're close with, the people we're further away from. So if you understand that as it comes to a relationship, that in any given moment, yes, you're right, there are times when there's extra stress and there parts of the story can become exaggerated and more right, we'll call it. But it's true that in any given moment, you know, you can, I'm sure we've all done this where everything's really fine, but there's one little thing and you just focus on that and you're really upset with that person because of that. But if you took a real accounting of the give and take in your relationship and the balance of your relationship, oh, it's overwhelmingly good. But right now, for whatever reason, my ego has chosen to latch onto that one piece of information. So there really, and this is true in our spiritual lives, there needs to be a retraining of our mind to not fall to the stories of the ego. And I believe very strongly that unless that's an active and consistent part of our lives where we're saying, no, one second, I know that I can get really angry at that person because of this, but I won't because he or she has also done these positive things for me. And this one piece, and I know my ego wants to latch onto this one upset and make this the whole story, but it's not. And being able to keep proper perspective that comes from appreciation, that comes from really understanding the totality of the relationship. I mean, how many times have we seen, even in friendships, right, where one thing happened, one thing, you've had 20 years of amazing friendship, right?
Politics.
Politics, right? It's interesting today. I was listening to this author. He was saying that, you know, 50 years ago, people would be very upset if you married outside of your faith. It was a big thing. Today, people are much less concerned about that, but they're much more upset if you're marrying outside of your political beliefs, which is really interesting.
It's a little scary.
Right. But the point is, I mean, we've all had this in life where you have a friendship and something happens. And if your friend were looking at it, objectively, you'd say, well, one second, okay, even if I'm 100% right, and my friend did this really negative action towards me, but in the totality of the balance of our relationship, clearly the good outweighs the bad. Why am I going to break up this relationship, this friendship?
But that goes back to honesty. You have to be willing to see it for what it is. Ego doesn't want exactly. you to ever do that.
That's the point. The point is, if you'd ask me and you'd ask any one of our listeners, I would assume, are you an honest person? That's, of course, yes. I don't want to lie to myself, but you have to know that you don't have free will. in seeing a true story. Your ego is telling you a full story. Right now, as we sit here, as every one of our listeners is listening to us right now, your ego, my ego, is telling me a story about something. Maybe it's about a person. Maybe it's about a situation.
And it's a belief or whatever your reality is. Yeah.
And unless you're actively fighting that and trying objective is the answer, right? I can call it spiritual, but spirituality just brings you to an objective assessment of the situation.
What's interesting is, as I mean, by the way, just think about this. You know how many thoughts we have in a day? Like, as you were speaking, I probably had like 15 different thoughts going back and forth. And I
was like, that uninteresting?
No. It would make me think about something else, oh, and then something else, and then something else. So one thing I started to do recently, and I only actually thought of it today, I was like, oh, that's something I've been doing for like a bit of time now, and I'm really happy about it. But I think it's because I'm open in a way that I wasn't years ago to benefit of the doubt, or, you know, what else could be happening here. So if I upset somebody, and usually my children are very quick to share with me when they feel like I've done something that they feel like they need something else or whatever. My response now is very different when we had our first, right? Now with the fourth, and as they're all growing, when they share something, whether it's a disappointment or an expectation they had, whether it's right or wrong, I just want them to share what they're feeling. And I say, well, is there something you feel I could have done differently? Not better, not how was I wrong or how were you right, but is there something you feel I could have done differently? And what happens, which is really, and that's why I thought of it today, usually it makes them pause, and then they get in touch with their feelings. And then they're able to say, okay, I wanted this from you, but I also, again, because we're raising our children in a spiritual home, but in any relationship, if they're thinking about, okay, well, then why was my expectation that? Or could I have done something differently? Because as soon as you ask that question, you disarm the other person. And then now they're like, well, wait, maybe I could have done something differently. For the most part, of course, it's not always going to work, and it depends. But I think it's a good exercise, even if the other person doesn't respond in that way, for us to have that openness and that approach to perhaps there's something else here.
I think it's such an important point. And again, I was thinking as you're talking that I would ask all of our listeners right now, if you can stop for a second and think about a story in your life. It could be with your spouse. It could be with a friend. It could be where you know the story, right? You've convinced yourself, you know, this person's mean. This person's lazy. My spouse is, you know, not attentive to me. And just tell one more story. Actually, my husband has a lot of stress at work right now, you know, so it's not that he doesn't care for me or love me, but he's just really focused on that.
Benefit of the doubt.
But I'm saying I would even go a step further.
Right. You ask.
Find one more story, right? So the story you're telling yourself that, you know, my wife came home and, you know, wasn't nice to me because what? Because she doesn't treat me nicely, because she doesn't love me, because she doesn't like me, right? Okay. Stop for a second. First, assume that this story your ego has told you is just not true. That's not the true story. Step one. Step two, take another story. She had a really hard day at work. Something she wanted to, you know, something to happen at work, and it got shut down. So then she came home, and of course, her mind is not focused to be attentive to me. Or I think it's really important, even just for the purpose of disarming our ego, to take that step, even if it's not 100% true. Tell the other story, because it will be almost impossible to appreciate, awaken real appreciation and the story that is not the ego story in any one of your relationships if you don't take this time to really take apart the story.
Here's the thing. A lot of our movies are based on past experiences, past hurt, old belief systems. So it's hard to, like, I can ask the question, is there something you feel I could have done differently? I'm okay with that, because I feel like I'm very in touch with myself, and I feel like I'll give myself that honest feedback if I make a mistake or I think I can do better, right? I really spend a lot of time in that area. And so I think for some, it might be hard to even ask that question, because they're like, what, you think that I'm not good enough? Or it's based on it is ego. It is. But it's not always recognized as ego. And that's right. Why I'm bringing up that scenario.
I think it's very important. I want you to unpack that, because I think, and we've had this in our relationship, where we don't make the connection to the to a person's history and why they might be either behaving in a certain way or reacting in a certain way.
Which is why emotional intelligence is so important. Though I had the biggest epiphany about this 2 years ago when I looked back at a period of time in my life. So our oldest son, you know the story. was walking in LA and this man approached him. David was getting his car. This man approached him with a post-it note and he wrote down the name of a girl he was dating and a relevant date and his age and even his name. I mean, this guy from nowhere, right? And he said, I just felt your aura. And are these things true? And they were actually all 100% accurate. And so he went on to say a lot of different things to David, which were true and did happen. We all thought it was a bit weird about how he approached him, but also very actually authentic, right? Like it gave him more, is it credence? It gave him more credence. So anyway, then the man goes on to say, I'm always involved in some kind of something, even if I'm not even, I was in New York. He says, oh, and your mom, you know, she used to, and I thought when David was telling me the story that he said she used to be evil. And I was like, that doesn't sound right. This guy he's been accurate so far about you, but that absolutely doesn't sound right. And I said, what? He said I was evil. And he's like, no. He said you had a big ego. And I said, oh, okay. And then I really thought about it because I'm like, that's not how I would define myself. I don't think I'm like outwardly that. And then I thought, what could he really be talking about? And then this is what I came to. And it was really a profound moment. So for the story of my life, and especially like for 20 years, the last 20, let's say 20 years, there's been a lot of judgment headed my way and a lot of meanness and bullying. Like, you know, and I don't want to condone anybody's behavior, and I'm not. It was wrong what they did. But I realized, right, because I was saying, how could it be such a big ego? For it to be a big ego, it has to be something that lasted a very long period of time, right? So I thought, okay, for 20 years, what happened, the way that I protected myself from getting hurt was that I became inward and I became an introvert and I stopped smiling when I walked into a room where I felt that there were people judging me. And I put up a wall and a guard and it created more judgment, actually. But I realized that that was ego, right? So my ego response in that way, even though they were wrong, and it's absolutely not okay that that happened to me, but spiritually speaking, it was necessary. But I realized that my response in protecting myself was also an ego response. So it's tricky, that ego.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting that I think it was Dr. Ellen Langer, when we had her on the podcast, I think she said, almost nobody does something for the purpose of doing something wrong, right? In their mind, there's a reason why it's the right thing, right? So whether it's your spouse, whether it's a friend, they're not doing it because they don't like you or they want to hurt you.
Or they want to fight.
Or they want to do something bad. And like you always say, and it's a very important word, you know, be curious. You know, okay, you came home and you yelled at me, for example. Why? I know it's not because you hate me, because we love each other. I know it's just because you don't respect me. I know you know, and I think, again, that's one other tool in really removing the ego's hold from our story.
Yeah, it reminds me of another story. One of my favorite authors, David Foster Wallace, gives this example that a man walks into the bank and goes to the bank teller and he's sitting with her and he's trying to get his transactions done. And she's distracted and she's like just not even there. They're sitting across from each other, but not even there. And he's thinking, oh God, this lady hates her job. Why did they hire somebody so incompetent? Right? The stories. This is ridiculous. What a waste of my time. I have to be somewhere too. She excuses herself very quickly. She runs in the back. Somebody else comes and replaces her. And he says, I'm so sorry for my colleague's behavior. She just found out, like right before you walked in, that her husband and child got in a serious car accident and she's just distracted and she's running out. So in any given moment, we have the opportunity to either assume it's malice, right? Or maybe it's mindlessness, or maybe the point is something else is going on. And right. I always like to hear and read about those kinds of scenarios and stories because I always want to challenge myself to say, okay, what else could it be?
And I would just ask our listeners, if you're in a relationship right now, try to find the ego story that you're telling yourself, because it's happening. I mean, it happened. I mean, I have to catch myself, and you know, and thankfully we have a you know, beautiful relationship. I'd like to go a little bit deeper.
Sure.
So this has a few parts to it, but I think it's really important, right? The idea of reincarnation as it relates to relationships. Good. So most of us know the biblical story of Moses. Moses was the leader of the Israelites. He took them out of Egypt and then he brought them to Mount Sinai. At Mount Sinai, there was a great revelation. It's called the Ten Commandments, the Ten Utterances. So it's and even in the Judeo-Christian tradition, it's clearly a monumental moment, however you interpret it, right? Spiritually, you know, religiously, Moses at Sinai is a culminating point for humanity. The Bible comes from that. The Ten Commandments come from that. Prior to the story in the biblical story of Sinai, there is somebody, his name is Jethro, who is Moses' father-in-law, joins Moses. And that's, as a matter of fact, the biblical story of Mount Sinai is actually called Jethro. It's not called Mount Sinai. The story is called Jethro. And it's a very strange thing because Jethro, again, his father-in-law, comes to join Moses with his daughter, Moses' wife, Zipporah, with their two children. And it's a very strange juxtaposition. Why is there so much focus on the coming together of Jethro and Moses before what would seem to be the much more important moment when Mount Sinai happens, this godly revelation to the prophet Moses, who then gives it to the Israelites? Not too deep yet?
No, I'm interested. Okay, good, I'm good, intrigued. Good, good. Also, I think the name Jethro is fascinating.
Yes.
It's like Jethro. It's not a word you say every day.
Yes. So the Kabbalists say something amazing. Most of us know the biblical, again, going back to the biblical story of Adam and Eve, they had two children, Cain and Abel. And Cain was jealous of his brother Abel, and he kills him. The Kabbalists teach that Moses was a reincarnation of Abel, and Jethro was a reincarnation of Cain. And that before the great light of Sinai could be revealed, there had to be unity brought by these opposite souls that in the previous incarnations hated each other. And that light of love, even though there were things, without going to the details of the biblical story, even in this incarnation, there were things they didn't agree on. They had friction, but they overcame their friction to become unified. And it was that love and unity between the ancient Cain and Abel, the current Moses and Jethro, that allowed the great light and revelation to occur. So when you look at your relationship from a reincarnation standpoint, which is most relationships, and we've spoken about this in the past, are two people who are not necessarily, I don't say the words compatible, but they're not the same, right? Right? You know, you didn't marry somebody who loves, you know, organizing and things to be in place and as neat as you, right? I'm talking to you.
I don't think I would like that kind of person.
Okay, but really, that's interesting.
No, I don't. Let me think. Maybe back out of that, Stephen.
I like somebody like that.
Yeah, because you're used to it. Everything's cleaned up after you. Anyway. That's funny, because that couple I was talking to today, they're like opposite. And I was like, that's not an issue, really. That's
not only is it not an issue,
I think it's...
And if you look at your relationship as this ancient cosmic purpose, and we're together not because we'll get along easily, and, you know, there's nothing about you and me that's going to cause friction. No, as a matter of fact, the friction is the purpose, that our souls have an ancient history. We've been together. Maybe we've hated each other in previous incarnations. Maybe we really didn't get along. And no, we did not coincidentally find each other. There's actually an awesome responsibility that we have to try to make it work. And if I want to be, and a person wants to be successful in business, or the successful one person wants to be successful in what they're doing in life, it might be the generation of this love from a place where there is also friction that will allow great light to be revealed and great blessings to come to the individual. So coming home and solving the argument we had yesterday is not something I have to do. It's if I want tomorrow to go great for me at work, or I want tomorrow to discover something amazing about my life, this is the force from which great light, meaning the overcoming of that friction, is the force from which great light will come.
Because I think a lot of times people will come to me when there is that friction. One scenario is it's gone on for 7, 8, 9 years and they're just worn down and they don't feel like meeting each other there. The other times they just think that it shouldn't be this hard, not recognizing that it's ego fighting back, because there's so many couples that you can see if they had made it work, what their lives would look like spiritually speaking.
It's crazy.
Then they will remarry and they'll be happy without any growth in that area. And not everybody wants that. That's the truth of the matter. Of course, when you paint it like Jethro and Moses and Cain and Abel, and don't you want to finish your karma? Yes, but in actuality, it's very difficult.
Agreed. But I just want to underscore this really important idea.
And I agree with you, but I'm just saying the reality is most don't ever do that. They never get to that place of like...
Or, and this is what I'm hoping to inspire within our listeners. You know, we've known many couples that got divorced, many couples that stayed together. If you really had the perspective, like, this is an ancient responsibility we have. And by the way, it might have to end in divorce. That's sometimes the right path. But you don't take it as, and not that people take divorce lightly or take even a not great relationship lightly. Of course, everybody would love to have a great relationship. But the amount of effort that you invest is commensurate with how special this is. Mm-hmm. And even if you're hating each other right now and you've been married for 3 years, you're not together by coincidence. There's some ancient light, call it, that if you can reveal will be unbelievable for you. Even, by the way, if you end up in divorce.
Exactly. I was going to say, you don't need to stay together, but see the process through.
But it's not just that you happened to meet on a date off Bumble 2 years ago. You got married. Oh, it was a mistake. Oh, now what do we do?
Interests and...
There are no coincidences. Every significant relationship that comes across your life is connected to some sort of, you know, I would call it reincarnation, but call it an ancient relationship. And take it with that seriousness. Again, clearly, that doesn't mean it never ends in divorce, but the amount of weight and work you're willing to put into an ancient relationship is much more than something that's, you know, flippant, again, not flippantly, but like, okay, you know, we thought we liked each other. It's 6 years later, we realize it doesn't work. Let's just go our own ways. No, you're not, and you often, as you often say, even, yes, but what did you learn? How did you change? So I think—
What's the opportunity there?
I think, again, for our listeners who are open to this spiritual concept, think about your relationship in its cosmic ancient framework. And that the friction, for sure, I was going to say, again, regardless of whether you actually stay together in the long term, the friction, when learned from, when changed from, is going to bring you great light.
Absolutely.
So if I can go even a little bit more deeply.
Please.
So in the ancient Hebrew, the word for man and woman have two letters that are the same. The word for man is ish. They have the first and the last letter are the same as
Isha.
They have the same two letters. And those two letters, so again, if they're just taken apart, are the word fire. Mm-hmm. Esh is the word for fire. So Ish is man, Isha is woman. And the Kabbalists teach that if they are able to overcome their ego and they are transformed by their relationship, then they become one, unified. And if not, they become fire. And the understanding is that the fire in a relationship, right, can be a cause of friction, is actually there as a source of energy that when transformed in the proper way, creates all the blessings that a person wants. Mm-hmm. So I hope we didn't go too deep.
No, I love that.
In this episode, but I think for all of our listeners, really, really understand, and I say this for myself, the ego is telling you stories. And unless you are doing the work, and I hope in this episode we inspired some of the work that
well,
can be...
Well, the first thing you have to know, you have to get so in touch with yourself that you're able to smell your own ego and identify it. So that's the first step, right? No ego's calling the shots, one. Two, be able to identify what is coming from ego versus what is your soul's desire. And three, then don't be afraid to have the conversations that are difficult because that is the purpose. A big part of the purpose of the relationship and discovering yourselves and really what your love is meant to do for you and for the world.
And from that friction will come great light and blessings, which is actually what you want from the relationship.
Right. Awesome.
So this is a great moment to remind our listeners to share this podcast with everybody they know. Go to Apple Podcasts, write 5-star reviews, share this podcast with everybody you know so that the light that we reveal and the wisdom that we share gets shared with more and more people. Also, continue to send your stories, comments, topic ideas to Monica and Michael at spirituallyhungry.life. Monica and Michael at spirituallyhungry.life. And as always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast as much as we enjoyed recording it.
Stay spiritually hungry.